Good morning and welcome to A Public Affair. I'm your host today, Shannon Young. My guest today is Boulder Mayor Aaron Brockett. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me today.
So I just introduced you as the mayor of Boulder, and the work you do in that capacity will be the focus of our discussion today. But what else do you do?
Well, I'm a longtime software engineer and small business owner. My wife and I founded a software development business about 20 years ago, but I actually resigned from that a couple of months ago to focus on the mayoral role. So that's my full-time position right now.
Prior to becoming mayor, you sat on city council. What initially motivated you to run for local office, and what issues do you like to focus on?
Well, prior to serving on city council, I spent 5 years on the city's planning board. And so the questions about how to make a more inclusive and welcoming and vibrant city were a lot of what really attracted me to getting involved in local issues. But matters of social justice have been a major focus, both of my initial run and of my time on city council. So those are things that I've found very compelling as well.
Just a Boulder Civics 101 question here. It somewhat threw me off as a relatively recent arrival to town. Boulder does not elect its mayor. So can you explain how it is that you became mayor?
Yeah, so, well, I'll just mention I first ran for office back in 2015 and was elected to a four-year term, and then ran for re-election in 2019 and was elected to another four-year term. And both of those are terms on the city council in general. And then the way that it works, or the way that it has worked in Boulder, because it's changing, and I'll get to that in a second, is that every 2 years after the city council elections and when the new city council members are instated, the very first thing they do at the very first meeting after getting sworn in is to elect the mayor for the next 2 years from within their ranks. So people put their names forward and there's a vote, and whoever gets a majority support on the city council becomes mayor. So I put my name forward back in November and got a majority to vote. So I've been mayor since November. Now, that is changing, as I mentioned. So there was a citizens initiative that passed, I guess, a year and a half ago. So starting in November of 2023, the Boulder mayor will be elected directly by the people. So no longer just by the city council, but by the entire electorate. And that'll be done using ranked choice voting, which is a system of voting where you get to rank your candidate so that if your top choice candidate isn't initially successful, your second choice vote then goes on to help determine who will be the eventual winner of the election. So watch for that on your ballots in November of 2023.
Does the potential person who will be elected directly by the citizens of Boulder, does that candidate have to be a sitting member of city council?
It does not. No, it could be a sitting member of city council, or it could be someone who has not previously run or served on city council. So that's open to anyone who qualifies for the ballot.
Are there any common assumptions that you'd like to dispel about the role of mayor or the position's ability to set policy decisions?
Yeah, well, we like to say that the role is a first among equals. When voting time comes, I have one vote out of nine, just like the rest of my colleagues. So, you know, you don't have additional executive powers like people do in larger cities. Like Denver has a what's called a strong mayor system. So Mayor Michael Hancock has a lot of policies that he can pass on his own and has a large staff that he controls directly. That's not true in the city of Boulder, it's not true in most cities in Colorado or across the US. We have what's called a weak mayor system or a council manager form of government, which means that the mayor presides over the meetings and helps set the agendas at the weekly council agenda committee meetings, but doesn't have any additional powers that other council members don't have. So it's more of a facilitation role and then also a ceremonial role, right? So that when there's a ribbon cutting or an important civic event, you know, that's something that the mayor will often attend and represent the city at.
You mentioned the system in Denver. Boulder is part of a larger Denver metro area, and there are a lot of just jurisdictional overlaps, or they're just right up against each other county-wise. How much leeway does the city of Boulder have within the county of Boulder or within Denver metro? How much overlap and coordination goes on among those jurisdictions?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's something that we work at very hard here in the city of Boulder is regional partnerships and collaborations. So we work with a number of different organizations that try to coordinate across different municipalities. So one of them is the Denver Regional Council of Governments, which helps direct transportation funding and transportation policy for the entire Denver metro region. I served as the city representative to that for 6 years, and now Nicole Spear has taken that over in the last 6 months. And so that body does a lot of coordinating work amongst the different jurisdictions. But there's also the what's called the Northwest Mayor and Commissioner Coalition. So the Boulder County and Broomfield and Westminster work together on transportation and some housing policy issues. So there's a group that meets every week. I'm sorry, not every week, every month. There's the Metro Mayor's Caucus, which is, has the mayor from each of the Denver metro jurisdictions come together every couple months to talk about common policy issues. And there's emails back and forth in between the meetings. And then there's some more informal collaborations. Well, actually, another more formal one is the Boulder County Consortium of Cities. So once every other month, a representative from every city and the county itself of Boulder get together and again talk about policy issues. Like, for example, right now, they're working on whether we might be able to set a regional minimum wage that's higher than the state level. So trying to coordinate amongst all those different jurisdictions. And then there's just a lot of back and forth on a regular basis. You know, I talk to county commissioners or the mayor of Longmont or a city council member in Broomfield. You know, when there are policy issues that we're all interested in together, we'll often have a conversation back and forth to talk about, you know, shared ideas and best paths forward. It's actually one of the really rewarding things of being an elected official in the area, and in particular being mayor, where you have a little bit of a bigger role in those conversations. There's a lot of great people in the area working together, trying to solve our common problems. So it's a lot of good work going on.
So on to some concrete issues. Housing. Everybody knows it's expensive to live in Boulder. With median single family home prices at about $1.5 million and ever increasing rents, what is the city doing to address housing affordability?
Yeah, of course, it's an enormous issue. Big problem for Boulder, has been for a very long time. It's a shared problem with many, many other cities. They're almost every desirable place to live in the country has housing affordability issues. But we're really working on a lot of different fronts here locally in Boulder. One thing that we're very proud of is our affordable housing program. So over 8% of the housing units in the city of Boulder are deed restricted affordable, meaning that they are permanently affordable to people meeting certain income targets, and whether for home ownership or for rentals, usually for people making 60 or 80% of the area median income. So we have thousands and thousands of those units, and we have a concerted push to get more done every year. And we have great partners in that, like the Thistle nonprofit housing organization, and then of course our local housing authority, Boulder Housing Partners. So the city works in very close coordination with BHP on producing new affordable housing. So we've been getting over 100 units a year for the last few years of additional affordable housing. And I was just meeting with the head of BHP not long ago, Jeremy Durham, and he says that they have projects in the pipeline. Roughly one significant new project is planned to get completed every single year for the next few years. So that's a great program, and it provides a permanently affordable place to live for thousands and thousands of our residents. Of course, that's not everybody, right? Our goal is to get up to 15% of the housing stock, a little bit over 8%. But then there's the rest of the city as well. So we try to create more housing options for folks. So one of them is that can be really beneficial is accessory dwelling units. So think about an apartment over a garage or in a basement with a separate entrance, separate kitchen. So those are often a much more affordable place to live because they have some shared spaces. They're also really great for multi-generational living, say for an adult child who needs to live at home for a while or an elderly parent. So it can give multi-generational options as well. So we've been trying to encourage the production of more of those by private homeowners for several years. We made the rules easier several years ago for those to get built. And we've seen a few hundred more of those added to the city in the last few years. But we're going to take another crack at it later this year and look at changing the rules to make them even easier to do, with the hope that we'll get more of those coming online in coming years as well. And then also just looking for places where, you know, maybe there are aging strip malls in the city that are past their useful life with big parking lots, and say, you know, could those get transformed into walkable mixed-use neighborhoods with, you know, a variety of apartments and townhouses and other different kinds of housing options? that it would be smaller and provide some different housing choices at a more affordable price point for people to get in and be able to live in the city who might work here already. So those are a few of the things we're doing. We've got actually a number of other programs, but I want to talk for half an hour just about this. But it's a huge priority for the city because we all know how big of a problem it is.
Oh, but we could talk for half an hour about this. We certainly can. And I assume you mean, or you were referring to the Diagonal Plaza with, you know, converting former shopping centers. I want to also ask about just around town within Boulder city limits. It seems like an awful lot of properties are zoned for commercial use and are sitting vacant. Are there any plans to rezone or convert those spaces into residential areas?
Yeah, and Diagonal Plaza, you're absolutely right. That's a good example of that. But there are a lot of other opportunities that have either already happened or are starting to happen or could happen in the future. And yes, the rezoning for older commercial properties is something that we're actively looking at. So we actually had a meeting last night where we're looking at the adoption of the East Boulder Subcommunity Plan. So this is a neighborhood scale plan for the East Boulder area for the next 20 years. And that part of town actually currently has zero units of housing in it. And it's all office, warehouse, manufacturing space, and parks, but no housing units within the city limits. So we're looking at how can we make some changes in those areas to allow for more mixed use opportunities. So looking at, for example, the area around 55th and Arapahoe, which we're looking at some significant potential rezonings around there to get one of those 15-minute neighborhoods with, you know, some commercial space on the bottom of buildings and some mix of office and housing above, where you could have one of those walkable mixed use nodes with affordable and attainable housing mixed into it on a major transit line on Arapahoe Avenue and with hop service coming in the next couple of years as well. So that's an example. We're also looking at the Transit Village Area Plan. The Boulder Junction east of the train tracks is another one that we're hoping to look at later this year. So yes, there are active efforts to see how those older, bigger parking lot commercial areas that are vacant or underutilized right now, how those could become more vibrant places for people to live as well as work.
Now, I started off with housing because it just interrelates to so many different aspects of life here in Boulder and the economy and livability, transportation. Related to housing is, of course, homelessness, which is another big issue quite literally at the doorsteps of city government. On paper, Boulder has increased the resources going towards homelessness. There is an ongoing debate over how much of those resources should be targeted at certain actions. What's your perspective, and what are unhoused people who are camping supposed to do?
Yeah, so homelessness is one of the most complicated and difficult problems that we face here in Boulder. And this is a national epidemic. The homelessness has been on the rise across our country for years, and it got much worse with the pandemic. So sadly, there are many, many, many thousands of people who don't have places to live in our society right now. And it's something that we work on very hard at the city of Boulder. You know, the primary approach that we take is a housing first approach, where the effort is to get folks who don't have housing into housing. And so there have been some major successes in that area in the last few years. You know, I mentioned a lot of additional affordable housing units coming along online. A number of those have been used for what's called permanent supportive housing. So that's where you get someone off the streets, you get them into an apartment, but you don't just leave them alone after that. Instead, you supply wraparound services, because folks often have other issues other than just not having a home. May involve substance abuse or mental health issues. And so, you know, they need some assistance to be fully successful. So those permanent supportive housing units come with the case management and social worker assistance and medical assistance and things like that to make sure that people can be successful in their new homes. And so we've been adding dozens of those every year. So we have actually, there are now more people housed in permanent supportive housing than there are staying at the shelter on any given night, you know, which has a bed capacity of about 160 people.
But permanent supportive housing, it requires a certain amount of systems navigation and onboarding. And a degree of navigation within a bureaucracy. What about the barriers to entry? Just opening a day shelter, for example. Are there any plans to reopen the day shelter?
There are, yes. Yeah. So we had a navigation center a few years ago that was run by Bridge House called Path to Home. And that unfortunately closed. Bridge House wasn't able to operate it anymore, and the building went on to other uses. But this city council that got seated in November has made this a high priority, because currently there's the shelter is open every night. It's a great partner to help folks experiencing homelessness, but they are generally closed during the day, except on really cold days. So there aren't currently places to go for most people during the day who are experiencing homelessness. So the creation of a new day shelter is a very high priority for this council. So we're embarking on a process right now to locate a facility that we could acquire and outfit appropriately so that we could provide people a place to go during the day, and the idea here is for this to be a navigation center. So it's not just a place to sit during the day, but it's a place to, it will be a place to take a shower, check your email, connect with the community court, and take those next steps along the path to getting housing. So, because it is an unmet need right now, I absolutely agree. So it's going to take a little while to get a great shelter set up, our day shelter navigation center set up, but it is in process and, like I say, very high priority.
And of course, the de facto day shelter without having a space, a physical space where people can go to navigate, to come in from the cold, to just be during the day. The de facto day shelter has been the central library. And librarians are not necessarily trained social workers. And libraries are also common spaces. So it's not the use for which it was intended currently. But I want to segue by mentioning the library into another big issue that is in the mouths of many locals, and that's the library district. A majority of city council voted recently to put the question of whether or not to form a library district onto the November ballot. The county commissioners were not as supportive, but advocates are moving ahead with petitioning the question to the ballot. What's your take?
Yeah, so I'm a fan of the library district concept, and I'll just say a few words about why that is. So the library has had flat or declining funding for many years, while the city budget as a whole has been growing. And it was hit particularly hard during the pandemic. And so the branches closed, and this, even after the initial public health crisis passed, branches stayed closed, services were greatly reduced, and the budget was reduced significantly. And this is because when our sales tax funding in town is highly volatile, and when it goes down dramatically, you have to cut somewhere, and the library often is at the forefront of the list of those cuts. And so it hasn't been able to fully thrive from a funding and support perspective for quite a while. The library district concept would add a property tax of an amount to be determined in an area wider than the city limits. And the reason why that's a reasonable thing is that currently only about 2/3 of the users of the library are residents of the city of Boulder, and about 1/3 are residents of Boulder County and the outlying areas. So the district would be wider than just the city boundaries of Boulder itself. And so it would align the users of the library with the funders of the library, with a small property tax which is a more stable source of funding. So it would get the library on a solid, permanent, stable footing with a wider tax base of the people who actually use the library. And that would enable the opening of a new North Boulder Library branch. It would enable the creation of a Gun Barrel Library branch. It would enable the Carnegie Branch for Local History to reopen and add additional services. It would allow maintenance to be caught up on. It would allow the Canyon Theater to reopen. It would add additional outreach to the Latinx population in the area, additional programs for the community. So I think it'd be a really powerful addition for the library's ability to provide services to the community. So I think it's a really cool idea. It would, of course, need to be approved by the voters. It would be a tax increase. And of course, any of those have to get approved by the voters. So ultimately it'd be up to the people, but I think it's a question worth considering.
I want to revisit something that you mentioned in passing as an answer to an earlier question, and that was a raise in the minimum wage. What power does city government have to set the minimum wage? And what are you thinking is an appropriate sweet spot?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, the state legislature allowed cities and counties to set their own minimum wage. So before that, that was not something that was allowed. So we got this ability not too long ago. So far, only the city of Denver has done that. They have upped their wage. I think it's a little over $15 right now. And then I think it's indexed to inflation, goes up once a year, something like that. So I think it's an idea really worth considering when you're talking about the high cost of housing and also rising homelessness. Some of these problems can be traced to people just not being able to make a livable wage, even if they're working full time and be able to stay on their feet. Setting that floor higher can ensure that the people are able to get everything that they need in life with a full time job. But I think it's also more powerful the more jurisdictions that can do it, so that you don't have wages going up and down when you cross city lines. So, which is why we're trying to work on a collaborative process with some of our neighbors to try to do something regionally. Now, you can only set it once a year in January. It can only go up by a certain amount every year. So I think it's kind of TBD to see exactly what the final number should be. But I think we should. I think you can let it go up by 10 or 12% a year, something like that. So the state minimum wage is 12. So I think it's worth starting January of next year to go ahead and get that started, get that 10 or 12% increase going, and then have a process with the community where we decide, what's the final resting point for that minimum wage.
Now, we are running out of time, but I do want to ask, what policy steps is city government taking with regards to transportation and its environmental impacts? Of course, Boulder is an area where, due to its high cost of living, many people who work in Boulder live outside of city limits. Other than bringing in more affordable housing, what other ideas are at play and are viable for making transportation less of a contaminant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that we work really hard on, which is regional transportation efforts. And I'm involved in a lot of those discussions, like at Metro Mayors and Northwest Mayor Commissioner Coalition, et cetera. So a lot of this is focused on better transit. We're working on on Arapahoe Avenue on bus rapid transit, a project to go from Boulder to Brighton with better bus facilities, much more frequent service, so that people can get from out of town and into town and commute into work here if they need to. Similar project we're working on is on Highway 119 between Boulder and Longmont to do bus rapid transit along that corridor. And we've already secured funding for some initial pieces of that. So there'll be construction going on before too long on North 28th Street to create bus-only lanes and on the right lane there, as well as some transit improvements on the 119 heading up towards Longmont. So we're trying to make it so that the transit will be a great choice that goes as fast or faster than a single occupancy vehicle on a number of our core corridors. And then also working on first and last mile issues. So that, if the bus stops, a mile from your place of business, how do you get there after that? So looking at options like micro mobility, we call it, with rental bikes or scooters. For example, the Boulder B-Cycle has just finished upgrading their fleet. So it's all electric now and their usage has shot up by enormously. I don't know the exact number, but by a high amount. Also, micro transit facilities. We're looking at a little mini shuttle bus in the Gunbarrel area, which is a very heavy employment area, to get people from the bus into their places of business. So transit use has gone down pretty significantly during the pandemic, but we're planning for the long term, 10, 20 plus years out, and looking at a transit rich with a future with good first and last mile options on each end.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground and we still have quite a bit more to cover that I could continue to discuss with you, but we are out of time. I want to ask if you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Well, I'll just say that, we've gone through a lot of difficulties and trauma the last couple of years with the King Soopers shooting, the fires, the pandemic, but we are just such an incredibly resilient community here in Boulder. Just the people here are, second to none. I'm just very proud to be the mayor in such an extraordinary place.
My guest today has been Boulder Mayor Aaron Brockett. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to A Public Affair on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Up next is Counterspin.